KPCA LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. Good morning and welcome to Inside Petaluma. I'm Tina Thomas. I'm co-hosting here with Jason Davies and Dennis Peter Thompson. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning, Petaluma.
Yep. Happy Friday.
Yep, it is a happy Friday.
You didn't seem so happy when you came in.
Well, I had an appointment down in Novato this morning, so I had to get up really early and go to this appointment. And then, I had a lot of stuff to do today before coming to the show. Well, and plus,
there's a lot going on this week.
There's a lot going on this week, but I just want to say my mother-in-law is still around. It's been 5.5 weeks since she's eaten. Last night, she was having, I guess, a little agitation. She had some Ativan and morphine and has hardly had any medication in the 5 weeks of this process. And I just am really grateful that my sister-in-law and my sister-in-law's, but specifically Mary, who is the nurse, is there and is caring for her. My mother-in-law's in hospice. She's 89 years old and decided to stop eating. But it was so amazing. The other day, they said that somebody said, was talking about Redway, a place where the family goes, up at the Eel River. And she says, I want to go. And then about 2 weeks ago, they were eating ice cream, and she comes and wakes up and goes, I want some ice cream. And she has had dementia. And it seems like the dementia has really cleared up at the end. And so it's an interesting experience because with my parents, they had a disease. They were gone within, a shorter period of time. So this is a really different way of watching somebody move to the other side. But she's comfortable, well taken care of, and I really... And that's not always the case.
Comfortable is really important.
It's really important. And, so many people don't even have the ability to have somebody come in and care for them because the state has taken that money away. So on May 23rd, I'm going to go to Sacramento to lobby to see if on some bills about for senior citizens and making sure, or even just somebody that has a child that has special needs, that is paid for at least 4 hours a day. And so it's pretty sad, but I'm also going to Davis today to pick up my 11-year-old granddaughter and her friend Shay. And so they're going to come to Petaluma, and Shay has been packed since Tuesday to come to Petaluma.
Oh.
So it should be a really fun weekend.
Yeah.
Or an interesting weekend.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What about you, Jason? What's going on?
For me, this weekend, I was supposed to go visit my brother with my family, and it turns out a couple of my family members can't come with me, so I'm probably going to go by myself. But, I've been planning this trip for the last 3 weekends, and every time I confirm it, some member of the family has some other plan they forgot about. So finally, I've got everyone on iCal. We have a family calendar now set up that we can all see on all our devices.
Then
my daughter said, why don't we have a calendar on our refrigerator? I said, why don't we just use iCal? You guys all have iPhones and everything. So, that doesn't have a lot to do with Petaluma, per se.
Petaluma is that we just had the Butter and Egg Day parade last Saturday.
And that was another reason that I didn't leave. So our kids were having a good time in their marching band attire.
That's great.
So that was fun. And I didn't walk in the parade, but I saw a lot of great PCA people walking. So,
yeah, PCA had a presence.
Yeah.
Specifically, KPCA. We were broadcasting live.
And you were on two floats, right?
I was on two floats. I was
a very popular
person. Float number six at the beginning of the parade, which was the Lagunitas float.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason behind that was they had 19 seats reserved on the float for leaders of nonprofit organizations here in Pelham. So, since I am the president of PCA, I sat on the float. It was good.
Good for you.
And then I turned around and got off and walked down to almost I Street.
116.
Yeah, we were number 116 this year, which was not fun, but anyway, we were in the parade, and it was a good presence for us.
I guess there was an earthquake. I just saw this. This was on May 2nd, so
mm-hmm.
This was yesterday. And it was only 3.4 on the Richter scale, and it was centered near southeast Santa Rosa, or that's where it was.
What was it?
Actually, the epicenter was 4 miles south-southwest of Calistoga, 10:38 p.m. So, just a little guy. But
there's a lot up in that area because of the geysers.
The geysers. Yeah. In fact, I think sometimes they're caused by some of that activity with geothermal stuff.
Okay, I have an idea. I think we should make our announcements at the beginning of the show because we tend to kind of run out of time at the end.
Yeah,
announcements. Excellent idea.
Yeah, let's do that. So, I'd like to start by saying that this Saturday, the 4th, is the Petaluma River Cleanup Day. So if you want to help clean up our river, it starts at 9 o'clock at D and Copeland Streets. That's the Steamer Landing Park. And at noon, there's going to be a barbecue, raffle, and live music. So go sign up at friendsofthepetalumariver.org/events to participate.
Cool.
And one more, on May 20th, which is a Monday, KPCA is having a benefit concert to benefit us here at KPCA at Petaluma Brewery, and tickets are $20 in advance, $25 at the door for adults, and kids 12 and under is $10 advance, $15 door, and it's going to begin at 5:30. 5:30 to 8:30. Your ticket includes dinner, which is being catered by Senor Sisig, and the entertainment will be our own DJ Saeed, who's going to spin some fabulous vinyl for you, and then following that, The Grain will be performing. So all of that for $20.
Sounds good.
That's a great deal.
Food. So save the date.
Where is it at?
At Petaluma. Oh, gosh. Lagunitas Brewing.
Okay.
Did I say Petaluma?
You said something.
Oh, it is, yeah, Petaluma.
It is.
Right, but it's Lagunitas.
Lagunitas.
Yeah. Okay.
So save the date, May 20th.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy.
All right.
I just want to talk about something that was in the Argus Courier. They were talking about, the smart train. And, and I went to a discussion a few weeks ago with Know Before You Grow, and they were just talking about downtown, what they want to do with the downtown. But it always seems like the east side is always like this stepsister that they don't really want to talk about. And so it's so important to realize that we really want to push to make sure that we have a Corona rail station. It's really important. And at the same time, I want people to go down to the Corona Road, and I want them to notice all the development that's happening and how the corner where the smart station is supposed to go, there's going to be high-density development there. And the reason I want people to really start looking at this is why the Corona overcrossing needs to be updated. You can't ride bikes. You can't safely. You can't walk. If you're in a wheelchair, you absolutely cannot walk over that, or if you have a walker. And it's just very, very dangerous. And the city on Monday is going to be talking about climate change and have, start moving forward, hopefully, before looking at projects that are going to look at the impacts of climate change. And the city seems to be going in 1961's thinking with their development, and it seems to be very car-oriented instead of multimodal, which would be bikes, pedestrians, mm-hmm. and cars have to be included in that. But the city keeps going in this direction, and I know for 25 years I have personally been talking about the importance of upgrading this area, and the reason is because of all the development that was going to happen. Well, the development is here, so now the public can actually see the impacts 25 years later of stubborn politicians that can't move on.
Yeah.
And so I just want people to start really looking around and seeing what you're seeing and asking questions why the Corona is not part of the 101 widening, which Caltrans did state that they would pay for this years ago, and the city pushed it out and said, oh, we don't want that. And so, and in the meantime, they want us to pay $80 million of public funds for Rainier, and at the same time say we're going broke and they want to tax us.
Yeah.
So it all ties together, and people just need to open their eyes and start looking.
Yeah. There's an editorial by John Burns. I don't know if you saw
dark,
that.
Dark Mora Man.
This went out yesterday.
Yeah.
And this is all about how Rainier is still very much a thing and on course, and criticizes Teresa a bit. Says, I called these city officials to get the facts on the long-awaited project after listening to a speech by Teresa Barrett last month in which she painted such a hopeless gloom-and-doom picture about the Rainier Connector that it left many people in the room wrongly believing that the project was dead in the water. Instead, I learned the city has a 10-year-old agreement with Caltrans to build the undercrossing and paid $7 million from its former redevelopment agency for a box culvert bridge support structure that will soon become its first visible component.
No, it's actually a new homeless shelter. Because that's what, it's not funny. That is exactly what's going to be happening, because if you go down to where COTS are, COTS is, I don't think we're going in the right direction for people that actually need services. And if they're not getting services down at COTS, you'd go up to Santa Rosa, read the Press Democrat about how people live under these undercrossings. And so it's a direct access to the river, and that's what's going to be happening. And I've asked the city about it, and they're silent on it. So, and John Burns, you know, he retired from the newspaper. I was hoping his retirement was permanent. And he's like a sticky penny that keeps coming back.
He's interesting too because in his defense, he wrote a very nice article about how the city needs to be doing more on
climate change. And yet he's supporting this.
Also, after decades of pushing car centered strip malls,
he's an opportunistic.
And we should invite him on here sometime.
Actually, that would be a great idea.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. I'm writing this down.
Okay. Really? I call right away.
Anyway,
I think it's a good idea.
Just let me know what day that is.
Yes. Jason.
I do want to just say one more thing.
I'll say this. I still have a little bit of animosity towards him, and it's based on how I was treated when I was running for city council. I don't know.
I think I've had the same treatment.
Yeah. And he distorted my positions, and he specifically called me out as, I don't know where he got this idea for having a skilled nursing center at Deer Creek.
Yeah.
Like, you know where I got it? The environmental impact report that maybe he should have read.
Well, then,
in which that was alternative C.
I got the bad treatment because I was
union
co-chairing the Living Wage Coalition.
Exactly.
With Marty Bennett at the time.
And look at how many years later, how it's circling back around all of a sudden, the Living Wage.
Speaking of which,
yes.
What you were going to say?
Well, I just wondered, there was one other thing about the sheriff, you know, the new sheriff in town.
Okay.
And he's listening. Well, last year I invited him to the Democratic, Southern Democratic Barbecue, which is a really large barbecue that people go to at my cousin's, the Fisherman's House in Pengrove. It's a great event.
I was there.
And, and so I invited him, and he assured me that he and his wife were coming, and they were a no-show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to invite him again, and I'm going to remind him that I invited you last year, you said you'd be coming, and now we want to hear from you. And we're really looking forward to him coming because he changed from Republican to Democrat.
Who's this?
The new sheriff.
Ah. Out of political expediency?
Yeah. Mark Essig. Well, I don't know why he did it, but I'm going to give him another chance. I'm going to invite him, and I hope that he comes because I want him to at least, I don't care where, I think that he needs to participate. So I'm going to do that again.
I'm putting him on the list also to invite him here.
Sheep in wolf's clothing.
Did you break the rules again?
Yes, as a reminder, we must have all of our mobile devices disabled.
I usually do.
We did it last week.
It was my daughter from Davis. You know, we're kind of having conversations back and forth. I'm hoping she brings the kids here instead of me having to drive up there, whatever.
Good. All right, so anything else before we talk about another item that's coming up for the City Council?
There's a new hotel coming, extended stay hotel in North Petaluma.
We need another hotel, don't we?
And then there's that other new one potentially is back on the board, Petaluma.
On
B Street
and the
Boulevard.
Yeah.
Ross Jones is bringing it back. And I guess the parking thing was the hang-up before,
right.
And now apparently there's a solution whereby he'll rent lot space from other businesses and then somehow valet people over there, and we'll see how it goes.
We'll see what happens, but I'll tell you about parking. I really think it's time the city starts charging for parking, because I did a two-day course in Santa Rosa on senior citizens and lobbying in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And so I had to pay $3 a day to park in the parking garage in Santa Rosa, and it was $3. It cost me $6 2 days. My car was, in a safe space. I didn't get a ticket, and we need the revenue, and maybe it's time that the city actually takes a bold move and starts charging for parking in the parking garage that we have.
Yeah, I mean, because there's maintenance expense for that garage.
Absolutely.
But the other thing is, my understanding is every time it's come up, a lot of businesses and perhaps, hopefully I'm not speaking out of turn, but perhaps the Downtown Association, I'm sure. But some of these organizations have opposed it because they're concerned that shoppers will have less of an incentive to come and shop.
Maybe in 1960s and 70s and 80s that was the case.
Yeah.
But this is 2019. We have to move to the new world.
There's also a solution. If you're a business that thinks that your customer should get free parking, you can give them a voucher.
That's
like they do in Santa Rosa. When I go to the Apple store or whatever, I get a voucher, and it doesn't cover my whole day, but, for a bit.
Yeah.
If I need to go to the Genius Bar or whatever I need to do. So we should be looking at that.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway. Stuff. Parking. One thing I will say, on the top of B Street,
yes,
very annoying to me. This is very local. This is where I, where I live. Oops, I'm divulging where I live. Anyway, the Victoria subdivision, there's a care facility right there.
Yes.
You get all these cars parking on that side of the street. But when you get into Victoria, you're not supposed to be parking on that side of the street because the street is narrow.
Right.
And for, fire, services and things like that, it'd be hard for them to get through in an emergency case. Well, every day I see people parking on that street. And I'm not one of these guys that wants to call, and get people to have tickets. I don't like telling on people. But at the same time, it's kind of a safety issue, isn't it?
Well, having this monster boat in my neighborhood is a safety issue, too. And because he's a firefighter, for some reason, the city won't do anything about it. And this has been going on for 3 years.
Yeah.
And recently, I turned him in because what he did was he takes his other big truck and parks it with a trailer in other cul-de-sacs, So he has all these, toys.
Yeah.
And so one of the times I turned him in, and I'm going to say I turned him in. I'm not afraid to say this. He went and parked that boat. This is a huge commercial fishing boat almost in front of my house.
Wow.
And it's taunting. And this is a firefighter that works in Mill Valley and should know better, but he's getting away with it, even though the police department tells me, no, that's not true. I know that's true because my dark-colored neighbor definitely got in trouble for his motorhome on the street.
Hmm.
So there is definitely bias.
I just got a citation in the mail yesterday for $100 for a bench being in front of my home.
Well, city needs revenue. I will say, go up to B Street. If you're the parking meter person and you're hearing this, go up there.
Yeah, what the city needs to do is they need to open the ordinance, this parking ordinance. They need to revisit it because it was done in 2003. It's 2019 now. You're putting in all these rental homes in your backyard with no parking, Well, if you want to have parking, you need to get these boats and other vehicles off the street.
The issue for me is that they only enforce it when they want to.
Exactly.
It's that I have a bench on the sidewalk in front of my house, which, by the way, faces a lovely waterfall and beautiful landscape and has at least 39 inches clearance on the sidewalk for ADA requirements. But yet this police officer, Joe Garcia,
he's not a police officer. He's a code enforcement.
For the Petaluma Police Department, lives one street over from me. So I went over there with my camera and I snapped 11 photos on his street of basketball hoops and picnic tables and hockey nets all on the street or on the sidewalk. I mailed them to him, and he said, if I want to complain about them, then here's the form. Go ahead and complain. So he's only enforcing it on me.
He's only enforcing complaints.
Because it's not even the bench. It's because I feed birds out on the street. I have a whole family of doves that come every night to eat, so I throw seed out there. Well, the neighborhood has a rat infestation because Brody Ranch.
Brody Ranch,
and we live next to a creek.
Right.
My bird seed is not the problem here. The rats are the problem. But anyway, he didn't want me putting the seeds out, so he cited me for the bench.
Well, I'm going to see if when the city opens up this ordinance, because there's been, I mean, you know, we're talking three people here. We all have issues, and we're only three people. So we have an entire community that feels the same, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, there is no ordinance against feeding the birds, is there?
We're not feeding the birds. No.
There maybe should be.
Well, maybe there should be. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be, and I get it that the rats do.
Well, we better have a study first.
Well, at least you're feeding them healthy food. The problem
is an endangered species.
Well, the problem is feeding them bread. Bread isn't good.
Yeah.
No, you're not doing that. You're doing
bread is bad.
Good, but
bread is bad.
Bread's bad.
Yeah. Anyway, we digress.
No, we forgot one thing about your bench.
What?
Who owns the sidewalks? Who has to pick the sidewalks?
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
That's a tricky one. They say, well, the sidewalk in front of your house you own.
Right.
You have to fix it.
But you can't have
your bench even though it's measured out so it's up to 80.
But what about a lemonade stand?
Oh, well, you know.
Anyway.
Well, no, they probably want tax revenue from it.
Speaking of revenues... Minimum wages. What do you think about that?
I think it's long overdue.
Yeah, it sounds like a topic worthy of discussion.
I think it's a good time to introduce our guest, Dr. Dennis Posake. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for being involved in this campaign to make the $15 an hour minimum wage happen here in Petaluma and everywhere in Sonoma County, as a matter of fact.
I guess I'm trying to take up where you left off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, what's impressive with you, Dennis, is, and I appreciate this, you ran for city council, you became active in our community, you lost by a very small margin, and you are still active. And I'm always impressed when somebody runs. And when, you know, we don't win, a loser truly just backs out. But
not
a true community member continues to stay involved, like you have too.
Yeah, well, when I lost,
all of us have
lost.
We have a lot in common.
But you know what? I'll tell you what. One thing I realized after losing the election is that my voice is just as strong on this side
absolutely.
Of the dais as it is on
absolutely.
The other side.
I would also just like to say, I mean, we're not losers.
No.
We won a lot of votes, just not enough to win
the
election.
That's right. But, you know, but we still have our voices.
Yes.
And where I would say the majority have just kind of withered away and they have not continued going in front of city council, making comments. And I appreciate you. Thank you very much, Dennis.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised a little bit that... of course, people ahead of me are all on the council. People have finished behind me. I don't think I've seen any of them.
Not one of them.
Anything. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I hear where you're coming from.
We're unique.
well, I mean, some are, like, one still serving on the planning commission, right?
Right, right.
So
good point.
Probably gearing up for next
Oh,
next
I'm
time.
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
Dennis, want to tell us why $15 an hour is fair for a minimum wage?
Sure. We think it's far beyond fair and far short of where we need to be. You know, the living wage in Sonoma County now is somewhere around $23,
it
certainly
is.
Over 20.
There's a study that supports
yes.
that.
And We're just asking to get to 15, in large part because that's what we think that should be obvious to everyone. We need to at least go there. We've been going around to all the city councils in Sonoma County, the major ones, I should say, as well as Novato, to try to introduce a resolution that all these cities could get behind. As is always the case, no one wants to be first. Mm-hmm. And in Petaluma several weeks ago when we presented to them, it was 7-0 in favor of the increase, but with a but in every situation.
And what was the
buts? Well, different buts. One of the big ones was that there was a person there who runs a home service company, a home care company that takes care of folks that with disabilities or with bad diseases. And there's some issue with they're already paying full wages for time spent sleeping, and they just didn't feel that they should have to pay a higher wage for time people spend sleeping, because these are workers that stay in the patient's home and who recently won a case, within the last few years, won a case where they are entitled to pay for all the hours they're away from their home.
Of course, they're providing a service, whether they're sleeping or not.
That's
exactly.
Right.
And, I mean, because we're dealing with this with my mother-in-law. She's had a caregiver come in, and, I mean, she's a fabulous caregiver. Been there for 3 years, and she makes 13 something an hour. It's not a livable wage.
Right.
And she doesn't get benefits. You know, if she doesn't work, she doesn't get paid. Yeah. And yet you look at what these companies make, they are, like, making almost triple. I mean, this family is spending $12,000 a month to have 24-hour care in the house.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It is expensive.
It's very expensive. And it's not the people that are doing the service. It's the companies that are making all of this money. It's become a capitalistic problem of how we're going to go ahead and suck every dime out of a senior citizen and their family.
Yes.
And that's what's happening in this country.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going to lobby on May 23rd in Sacramento.
Well, and the minimum wage, increasing the minimum wage in that instance, it seems like really just a patch over something that's a deeper problem.
That's
right. We should have better care for elderly people. They shouldn't have to go to these for-profit centers, and charge family members so much money just to take care of you.
And I think that's a big issue in terms of we know $15 is not enough, but we also know that the majority of folks in this county can't afford a roof over their head.
Well, in the Press Democrat yesterday, it was talking about people that are, because they're under Section 8, and they're being evicted. They can't live in Sonoma County, so then you're having a person that is in their 90s or 100 years old having to find a place for somebody to live. And if you look at putting somebody in a rest home, we'll call it, versus having somebody in their home, it's a lot cheaper because we are paying for those facilities and for people to stay in there. And if I'm paying, I want to make sure that people get quality care, they're in their home, and that's just not what's happening.
And our whole system is a lot like multiple coin flips day after day. If you're a low-income worker and you're trying to find a place to live, you apply to all these places. There's no single application you can fill out. There's no single person in charge of telling you when you get in. I'm involved with Rapid Response as well. I think I've talked to you folks about that before. Mm-hmm. And our Haitian family just got a call. In fact, I think right now they're at a meeting in a subsidized housing unit in Rohnert Park. Mm-hmm. It just came out of nowhere. They've been living in Petaluma at the old Enclave, the Vineyards apartments. Mm-hmm. And actually, while we're on this, if I can make a couple comments about that. Mm-hmm. These are things I didn't know until I went canvassing with North Bay Organizing Project last week, and that it just so happened that canvass, which was to educate tenants about a possible tenants union, they were canvassing to get support for this, and that's where my Haitian family lives, and I've been concerned that when they got in there, they thought their rent was whatever it is, 2,200 and something. And then all these other charges started popping up. Additional charge to park a car there.
2,200?
I just heard that, Dennis, that they have a base, and they're adding all these expenses.
There's a landscaping cost.
Right.
There's the parking cost.
That sounds outrageous for Section 8 housing, no?
No, that's not Section 8. I'm sorry, that's where they are now.
Oh, that's where they are now. Okay.
Subsidized housing would likely only charge them 30% of their income. Which would be half the price, half the cost.
But this is a workforce. I mean, these people are needed in this county or in any city.
And even employers who are not totally in favor of this agree that many of their positions go unfilled because no one lives here. They can't find anyone who will travel this far to work.
Well, and the price of gas, over $4 a gallon. I mean, you know, people really can't afford it. We don't have a transit system that is really functional.
Yes.
So there's a lot of problems, a lot of multiple problems that need to be solved.
And another issue for employers is this idea that many of them are restaurants and don't want to pay $15 an hour base to their tipped workers. Okay?
Well, you know, yesterday I was at Smart Final because I had to go buy chicken legs for my dog that likes raw chicken legs. And so I'm there buying, you know, these package of chicken legs, and there was this lady there, and I just wanted to talk to her. Because I happened to be seeing in back of her, there was the styrofoam, you know, containers that you can buy for takeout food. Well, she owns a restaurant in town. She owns Marvin's on the Boulevard. And, oh, my God, we talked for like 15 minutes. We were talking about, I was telling her that there's the minimum wage, you know, in Petaluma is going to be coming up. And she was just talking about her workers and how, you know, they get very good tips. I mean, she said Petaluma tips very well. And I said, well, you should be watching for this. Because it's the direction that cities are going. But we also talked about the fact that when you go to a restaurant, Pearl in town, they include the tip. And I happen to like that because I know exactly what I'm getting. And it's a good tip, I'm sure. And I'm not really – actually, I have to talk to them to see what their percentage actually is. I love the people that work there. And
there's certainly you certainly don't see that the service is less because the tip is already paid.
Exactly, not at all. And so I was talking to her about maybe you guys should look at this and actually watch about what's going on with the minimum wage. But she was super nice. And on the styrofoam, because, you know, we're talking about the environment, they originally started off with styrofoam because it was the cheapest. And so they're doing well, her and her sister. And so what they've done is they've gone to more biodegradable. And one of the things is, you know, styrofoam, the food in there kind of sweats. And so there's benefits to getting away from it besides just the environment. But that's another thing that I'm hoping we're going to move in Petaluma and get rid of all styrofoam, all straws. But, you know, it was interesting talking to somebody at a restaurant.
Plastic straws.
Yeah.
No, I've seen that at Lunchette recently.
Exactly.
They've got rid of some of the plastic.
That's right. And so you have to really stop and talk to these business owners. And they're pretty cool in this town.
Yes.
And they're very receptive. And so this is my push for Marvin's, and I'm going to go there for breakfast on Sunday.
Wow.
We're a nonprofit, no advertising.
Sorry.
It's
a soapy day. All right.
The objections for people that are restaurateurs that have tipped employees, they don't want to raise it to 15, you're saying. I mean, they could take it out of the tips. That extra few dollars per hour?
I don't know. I will say I don't know all the laws surrounding handling of tips, but I will say that all restaurants do it differently, and yet all of them are very – because I've talked to lots of them in regards to this $15 minimum wage.
Yeah.
They all handle it differently, and yet they all feel unable to change because the employees don't like change.
Well, I certainly – if I were a waiter, I wouldn't want tips to go away.
Yes.
And I wouldn't work for a restaurant that didn't allow tips.
And I think that argument I brought it up to try to refute it, the one about the tip people, because the state minimum wage, which is $12 now, doesn't exempt tipped employees from that. So that even if you somehow exempted tipped employees from this $15 minimum wage, it would only apply to that last $3 because the state doesn't allow it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it would only, like, save 20% of that.
And it's a ridiculous argument anyway because tipped employees have always had a minimum wage.
Right.
So all we're talking about is raising the minimum wage to a level that makes more sense. I mean, it's how many years has it been since we raised the minimum wage?
Well, it's going up every year right now, but that just started, as we talked about earlier, I think, in 2015.
Yeah.
That was
but,
bad.
You know, in other states, I believe my sister-in-law told me this many years ago when her daughter was living in Arizona. I mean, her minimum wage working at a restaurant was, I mean, almost zero. I mean, it was like a dollar.
You mean it wasn't minimum
it
wage?
It wasn't minimum wage, was my understanding, because they got tips. And so I think it's state by state.
I don't know if that's legal.
I don't know. But this
what state was this?
This was Arizona.
Absolutely. Arizona, the tipped minimum wage, you know, I haven't looked at it for a while, but it's like $2 or $3.
No, that's what it was. This was, and I'm going to go over there today and I'll find out for sure.
Of course,
sure.
The cost of living is lower there probably.
It doesn't matter. $3 an hour. Come on, Jason.
I wouldn't move there. Either, but
but that is an example of, you know, here we're discussing this, and you know,
well, they have a kind of a conservative government there, I guess, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, here in California, the minimum wage in 2019 was $11 an hour for businesses with less than 25 employees and $12 an hour for businesses with more than 26 employees. So, you know, we're not asking a lot by asking for
14. And if we go up, you know, later this year to $12.75 as our suggested ordinance says, and then in another year to $15, okay, the state minimum wage will be up to $13 by then,
right.
But that's still $2 ahead, and that $2 an hour is going to amount to over $4,000 a year for that employee, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all going directly into the local economy.
Well, that's what people need to connect those dots, because when somebody makes more money and they can have, you know, 30% for living, and then they have monies for food, monies to go out, monies to go to the movie, whatever it is. I mean, to go to Target to go buy your kids' clothes, basically.
As opposed to when the big McDonald's in the sky gets that $4,000, how much of that do you think goes local?
Right.
So then this
exactly.
I don't take this position, but just the devil's advocate position that I hear is that, yes, but isn't that going to mean that the goods become more expensive?
Yes.
So then I'm going to go out less, which is going to end up hurting the employee that works in a restaurant, because I'm not going to go out to eat as much, because now that restaurateur has to pay them more. They're going to raise the prices of their dinners. It's going to go past my threshold, and then I won't go eat there anymore. So this is where the concern is.
Right. And the answer is that labor researchers over the last couple of years at UC Berkeley have studied recent minimum wage increases in six cities over the last 5 years. And what they see is that if the minimum wage goes up, you know, every study's a little bit different, and every city's a little bit different. But we're talking 1.5 for a dollar increase in minimum wage, 1 to 1.5% increase in the restaurant prices.
So
for a $2 increase, even we're going $2 in 1 year, we're talking at most 3% increase in restaurant prices. And even if you and I have to pay a little more, the 3% more, that's nothing to the worker who's now making $4,000 more.
Well,
it's not like they're not gaining
that,
anything.
Well, if we look at Trump's tariffs, those have actually cost the consumer a lot more than a minimum wage. I mean,
that's what I was going to bring up next, because, you know, importers, for
example,
even small businesses, even my business, I'm getting hit now with a 10% tax. Well, that tax, I mean, that doesn't benefit me or any potential employees that I would hire. I mean, that goes just to the government directly. I don't know if Trump understands the way these tariffs work, but it basically just means that my cost of goods went up 10%, and I either need to raise prices or have less margin for my resellers and for myself, which means I'm going to be less likely to put money back into the economy.
That's
that's a 10% increase. So there is a threshold. What you're talking about is when it's that smaller increase, it's negligible, it's more psychological, it doesn't hit the consumer. The consumer doesn't really make it a purchasing decision based on that. So when you guys are getting it at 10%, that does make a bit of a difference.
Okay, well, I have a fact sheet here from North Bay Jobs with Justice.
Yep.
And I'll read from it. It says, UC Berkeley Labor Center researchers estimate that implementing a $15 an hour minimum wage by 2020 in the North Bay will increase restaurant operating costs by 2.1% and will yield a cumulative 1.8% price increase by North Bay restaurants.
Yes.
That's
their averages. And the point is, though, that this minimum wage increase we're talking about, where in this case more like $2, right, from what we are now to 15, when you take into account that I think they're talking about everyone below 15, and so not everyone is getting a $3 an hour increase, that over 2 years, what we're asking for is 12 to 15. That is a 25% increase, and yet the prices only, went up. In that case, it might be double what that, might be more like 3%.
Yeah, you said it was 1.8%.
Because, again, even if you talk about restaurants, commonly consider that wages are a third of their expenses. Okay, so that it makes sense that if you raise the wage 10%, that we'll only need to increase the total operating expenses by 3%.
So basically, if you had a $15 entree, it might go up to $17.
Well, with
a 13 to 17?
No, 15. If it's $15 and you went up 1.8%, it's like almost $2 more.
No.
$15 times
0.01.
Well, it's 1.8, right?
Yeah.
So, 0.27. 27 cents.
Yeah,
right.
27
right.
cents.
$15 and 27 cents.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll order my entree. It just went up a quarter.
Yeah, right. Exactly. People in this town are very generous. They say they tip very well, and they're not going to not go out because of a small increase.
A lot of
people don't realize that you're already paying subsidies to these people who have to get food stamps.
That's right.
Yes.
And that's a good entree if I can give you, my four reasons why this is good for employers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And one of them is what you just brought up. I'm sorry, where were you going with that again?
I was just saying that we're subsidizing these folks.
So employees who get raises, not all of them, but some of them are going to utilize, therefore, fewer social services that we're all paying for through our government.
Well, and that goes back to, making it that people can actually stay in their home.
Yeah, right.
But if the government actually subsidizes home care, it's actually cheaper all around, and it's a healthier for our community.
Same argument for health care.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same argument. Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
And similarly, the employers, part of the reason that the UC Berkeley folks felt that the prices only went up 2% is that people who are making more money are more likely to stay in the job. There's less turnover, less training dollars. For many low-wage employers, there's big training costs.
Well, what does the police department always say? We can't keep people here because it's basically the way that they the way the formula is. It's a setup formula to have to increase.
Yes.
And, so they're basically saying, we have to increase to keep people here.
Right.
Which is not my favorite argument for that particular
thing. And the third thing for employers, is that they all complain. Let's not be exaggerate. Most complain about not being able to hire employees for some positions because it's too far for them to travel.
Right.
Because they can't live here.
That's right.
And clearly, all this stuff is not going to be fixed by a $15 minimum wage.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be dented.
Can they live here for $15 an hour?
If they're only a little bit short of the money now, if there are two people working at minimum wage, I believe that they can suddenly live here. Two minimum wage salaries might just get you over the hump to be able to live here. Again, you'd be making a sacrifice. You'd be paying more than 30% of your income for a roof.
Right.
But
I'd like to see just more housing for people, more subsidized housing, because it's good for the economy.
And so would I. And I really got into this because of that reason.
Yeah.
Because this is, to me, is the lowest hanging fruit in trying to improve that situation.
Well, many years ago, across the street from where the Golden Eagle Shopping Center is, I am telling you, people complained because this place was going to be built. We don't want those low-income people in our town. And it was a very difficult piece of property to put together because it was about, say, 5 or 6 different property owners. It was totally contaminated. And so the city was working to bring in low-income housing. I'm not sure if it's a Burbank or one of those groups.
Yeah, I think it might be Eden.
Yeah. It's Eden. It is. And so, I mean, I can't believe these were people I knew, doctors, dentists, were complaining about we don't want those people in our town. So the project is built. You never see anybody just hanging. They're actually people who just work in our community or they work. And it's a well-maintained building, and I wouldn't mind living next door to something like that because they're people.
Right.
They're just making our community work. I don't need to be next door to the rich people.
Yeah,
I'd rather just be next door to people that actually contribute in a different means.
Yes,
and government subsidies, people are so afraid of them, but they really have a benefit because they make the economy work.
Sure.
So,
any money people get from our social services people goes directly
back into the economy.
Yeah.
But I do want to just say something about the Press Democrat, yesterday's article. So you look at the top, it says, Barr defends handling of the report. The one below says, struggle to stay housed. And this is this woman, and they're saying Medi-Cal recipients find skilled nursing homes out of reach in this county. And then you go down to the bottom, Trump moves to wipe out the Affordable Care Act. I mean, what kind of a country have we become in a short period of time?
I see it as all me, me, me.
me, me, me. And yet...
I'm not sure how, and I suppose that's one reason I stay active is because I'm a little bit panicky that I'm going to die with the world worse off than when I came.
Well, and I feel the same way.
Yeah.
So...
This is interesting. I was just looking at an article about... Paul Krugman, because I don't know if you recall when he came out sort of saying that the minimum wage could have a negative impact on employment, but then apparently he flipped that position. There was a Card-Kruger study, and this is, it says, until the Card-Kruger study, most economists, myself included, assumed that raising the minimum wage would have a clear negative effect on employment, but they found, if anything, a positive effect. The result has since been confirmed using data from many episodes. There's just no evidence that raising the minimum wage costs jobs, at least when the starting point is as low as it is in modern America. And that's interesting because I remember during the council race, Matt had a show, and one of the candidates was on the show, and he was arguing against the minimum wage. And he, I don't know if Matt was aware of it, but he mentioned Paul Krugman as a leading economist. So I guess that candidate was a little bit behind.
No, and this UC Berkeley recent study confirms that as well, that there's no loss of jobs in relation to
that. Fortunately, he's not on the council.
And, the other complaint that people often have is that, well, these are all entry-level jobs. These are just high school students trying to make a few bucks. But in Sonoma County, the average age, the median age is 33 for people in minimum wage jobs, and the 90% are above age 20. 10% are teenagers.
Okay, so now that we're all on board with increasing the minimum wage, what's next?
Well,
how do we make it happen?
You know, we were at city council a few weeks ago where we had this yes, but. And now I think we're in limbo waiting for
another city to do it.
Well, they're waiting for staff to produce something, or maybe they're waiting. It's hard to get a specific answer from our council. I think it might be time to go back and request that specifically. I think they probably are waiting for someone else to do it, and it's going before the Sonoma City Council this next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not as hopeful that they're going to all be yeses. So some of us are going to go back and speak to that and ask them to just support Petaluma by coming on board. I would like to see the Petaluma City Council take the lead on something. And to me, this is the lowest hanging fruit I can conceive of, based on everything I've told you, for them to take the lead by jumping on this and saying, okay, that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We're going to do it.
Well, the things that they fight for sometimes just astonish me, and things that are just so important to your community, they don't.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't, it's not my style of politics. Mm-hmm. I prefer to be tenacious, persist, and insist.
One of the good things about this ordinance that's being proposed is that it will include a cost of living adjustment.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's why it's so important to get it passed as soon as possible, because we're going to get more COLAs prior to when the state goes up. You know, we're going to be up, if we get it passed the way we've presented it, we're going to be up to around 1640 by the time the state gets to 15.
And what is the percentage of the increments on this COLA?
Oh, well, it's just related to the cost of living increase, so okay. I'm making an assumption of 3% or a little less.
Right.
I meant to look that up before I came today. I think the last few years has been 2.something, 2.3, 2.5.
Yeah, yeah. And even most unions who contract wages for employees allow for an adjustment. And the union where I came from, it was 3%.
Sure.
Which is fair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're going to pick a number, I think it would have to be that. If it's a little less, that's fine. We're still getting an adjustment. And certainly when you worked on the living wage, that has an adjustment, a yearly adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it looks like there's only a few states that don't even have minimum wages. South Carolina.
But they still fall under the federal minimum wage of $7.25.
Yes, federal minimum wage applies. Yeah. Another one, North Dakota, has $7.20. No, they do have a minimum wage, $7.25.
Well, that's because they're forced to.
Yeah.
There was one other one. Alabama doesn't have a minimum wage. Huh.
I don't think Georgia does either.
No. They don't. Yeah. They don't make people wear masks either when they're.
No, Georgia has one. It's $5.15 an hour.
Oh my God.
Let me tell you, in '86, yeah. I went back and lived for a year there. That's where my dad was.
Uh-huh.
And just for fun, because I didn't want to be around the family full time, I went to a local diner and was a waitress. And this was in '86. I made $2 an hour.
Whoa! With tips also?
No, tips weren't included.
What? God, I was getting a dollar per tooth for the tooth fairy. That was more than you were getting.
You know what, though? I would have never have not had that, wanted to have that experience. Because just being in the country and in this diner, having to learn which people in the community could read or not, depending on whether I had to read the daily special to them. And
so this is interesting. This is about quiz time. So which state has the highest minimum wage?
I would have to say New York, but I'm not sure.
Anyone else guessing?
L.A. Oh, San Francisco. San Francisco. State. California.
Yeah, I would have guessed California.
No.
Oh, Hawaii.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not California, but I thought New York, maybe Massachusetts.
Washington.
Oh, Washington.
Oh, you know what? That sounds right.
Yeah. But not by much. 50 cents. So they're at 11.50, and we're at 11.
I always forget how progressive the state of Washington
they're
is.
They're very progressive. In fact, the governor, Inslee, who's a candidate, is running very strongly on climate change. But he's not moving much in the polls, but I heard him on the radio today. Seems like a good guy. Anyway, and Massachusetts is at 11, so they're with California. Maine is at 10. New York, you mentioned New York, 10.40.
Wow.
So they're actually below us.
Yeah.
And I think the lowest I've seen so far was that 5.15 in Wyoming.
But again, I think that's superseded by the federal, I think.
How about Texas?
Texas. That's a good one.
Is that a state or a...
Yeah. I'm not sure what Texas is sometimes.
It's a state, 7.25.
Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, that's another point I'd like to make. Corporate profits are the highest. You know, they're higher now than they were before the recession, and workers are getting none of that. You know, in the last, I believe it's approaching 30 years now, maybe closer to 40 years, when housing is up 50% and the bottom 60% of workers are flat. They're up nothing. The bottom 20% are down 11% in purchasing power.
Yeah, and you know, a good place to go on the internet if you want to learn all about this stuff is North Bay Jobs with Justice.
Yeah,
and their website is northbayjobswithjustice.org. They've got Q&A sheets for you to look at if you're curious as to why we're supporting it. I would hope that once you looked over some of these some of the information that they have there, that you would support it as well, because it really is the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And of course, they have one of their major projects is called the Alliance for Just Recovery, mm-hmm. which is where they've brought together pretty much all the major labor, environmental, and faith players in the county
yeah.
to work on recovering from the fire.
Right.
But a big part of that is the wages as well as the housing.
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, you know, we've got a couple of minutes, and so I want to make sure to thank you again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, you just always provide such great information for us.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of this, but it's just real good to reiterate it because it's important stuff.
Yeah.
We're trying to educate the community.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that people yeah. understand the bigger picture because, you know, in newspapers, you know, like John Burns, you get a soundbite. And then mm-hmm. you attack somebody. Mm-hmm. And this is actually giving information so people can oh, actually right. digest, really think mm-hmm. about it. And, you know, next time you go out, you know, you think about what is my money actually buying and how they're helping.
Yes.
But I would like to say that...
We only have 1 minute left.
I'll wait for this for next week.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay.
It might take me 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Or 30 seconds.
Yeah, now I forgot what I was
saying. No, actually, it was a Deer Creek. There was a forum for Deer Creek because they're going to build housing there, which, of
yeah.
course, it should have always been, you know, yeah. a
yeah.
project. So what happened was I wasn't notified of the first one, so they had a second one. And so the joke was being when they tried to arrest me for trying to stop the traffic.
Okay, that's a story for next time. That's a story for next time. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. You've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas with co-hosts Janice Cater-Thompson and Jason Davies. And thank you again, Dr. Dennis Postkay, for being here. You can go to our website at InsidePetaluma.com, and all of our shows are archived there. But come back and listen to the new shows every Friday, 11 to noon.
See you next week.
Have
a great
weekend,
everyone.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.